Hello and welcome to Talking Stars, the November edition, where we are going to look forward to all of the movies we are looking forward to seeing in November and look back on what happened this October. Was Halloween a hit? Did Venom bite? That is the question we're here to fight. And joining me today is Damien Riley from Damien Riley Podcast.
Hello, good people of the movie world. Glad to be here with you today in
Hello.
chilly October.
Chilly, maybe not. It's still Indian heat wave here, for once.
It's funny you should say that because it is here too in the day, but this morning for some reason it was real chilly.
Yes, well, we've had our weather reports. And with Kira out on assignment, we're going to dive straight in to Damien's first pick of November.
All righty. Well, October's been there have been some pluses and minuses, I must say. I've been surprised by some releases, and I've been surprised by some releases that I thought wouldn't be good and actually were. So I hope for more of that. I always like to be surprised, but I prefer surprises on the good end. We'll get to Halloween later. But anyhow, well, my first one is Wreck-It Ralph 2. And I would like to say that I really liked Wreck-It Ralph 1. When Darren and I do this, we get to some degree, pick the films that we're going to talk about for the previews for the coming month. And when I saw this one, I thought, well, that's certainly one I'll probably be able to convince my daughters to go see their. Sort of in the preteen. Well, one's in the teen stage, the other's in the preteen, so they'll probably want to see it. Well, they've already let me know they're not interested in seeing it, so I'll need to see it on my own, I suppose. I really like Sarah Silverman. I think she is very talented, and I enjoy hearing her voice set to cartoons. Not so much though. I prefer people in their actual skin, but she's very funny in Wreck-It Ralph 1. I think most people will agree who've seen it. And I just I've watched the trailer a couple times. I guess there's several trailers out, four or five. So I've seen two so far. And I must say that I'm not super thrilled about the trailer because it doesn't show any racing of any kind. And I think that this movie is sort of derived from Mario Kart. And so I would have liked to see, or Donkey Kong, Mario Kart. So I would have liked to have seen more of the racing stuff, more of the candy, racetracks, things of that nature. It appears to drop a nod to the Me Too movement, which is cool. And it makes sense because Sarah Silverman is really, really, part of that, kind of the center of it, and good for her. I'm not sure how much of that's going to figure into the cartoon. I don't really see them as congruous, but if it is, so be it. I just didn't see a lot of car racing, mostly, so that sort of let me down. Something like the Disney princesses are all together and they're trying to figure out if the glitch is a Disney princess or not. And they ask her all these questions and one of the questions is, does everyone say that you got successful because you got with a big, strong man? And she says, yeah, I hate that. And they say, okay, you're a Disney princess. So it's kind of funny. But, how funny? I don't know. We'll see. So, yeah, Wreck-It Ralph 2, like I said, my daughter's dropped out. I think it has more of an appeal to the teen, preteen ages. But a lot of us who are much older than that liked the first one when it came out. So we'll have to see. And I would say on an anticipation scale, it used to be about a 9. I'd say it's come down to about a 7 because basically because of the trailers. So I guess that's me, Darren, on that.
Fair enough. Well, I did also love the original. It is probably one of my favorite American animations of the last 5 to 10 years. I think it does a brilliant job of trying to push people to be different and not be the same as part of the crowd, etc., for
Yeah,
what the
definitely.
princess has to deal with. And then you add in the fact that John C. Reilly is fantastic as Ralph himself.
Yes.
And the video game background, where we have so many nods to video games throughout the movie. And then you also have like the idea that Ralph and Fix-It Felix are from like a simple arcade game, and then they meet someone from like a PS4 type game with the lieutenant and all of the aliens. And then you have sort of a middle ground, like 90s type of game where your princess has come from, and the sugar rush track and everything. So you mix a lot of them. The idea that it was set in an arcade is a bit weird because it was kind of going out of date at the time when that movie was released. Arcades just aren't a thing anymore, really.
No.
So I was happy that we had one movie. I managed to pick that movie up on so many different points and just watch it to the end. I love the Owl City song at the end, if you know that from the end credits.
Vaguely.
And I didn't really need a sequel, if I'm honest. It's a fine movie on its own. I will be watching it in a non-cinema format, so basically when it becomes available on Sky, because that's about as far as I'm willing to go with this movie. I don't really understand the plot from what you see in the trailer. He breaks the internet. It's like, okay, so we know she can't leave the game anyway, so we're kind of stuck probably without her. Does that make sense? Because if she can't leave the game, if she's a glitch, if they just bypass this completely. The princess scene just seems pointless and annoying, and it's already upset a lot of people.
Has it really?
Don't know, it just seems like it already makes them out to be a bit weaker than they already were in their fairy tales in the first place, a few of them.
Yeah. Well, I
I
think
know.
the glitch character is really I know it resonated a lot with my daughters in the first movie, and I think a lot of young girls really liked the glitch. So I think they're sort of, cashing in on that heat, so to speak. But yeah, I'm with you. I didn't understand the joke. I thought it was just sort of a nod to the Me Too movement, which, anybody who's sane is behind that. But I just didn't understand why they had to, tie it into the trailer of the movie when we want to see what does breaking the internet mean. They sort of do some stuff before that joke. They sort of show the internet breaking. He goes to the search bar, so to speak, quote unquote bar, and I guess tries to get a drink at the search bar. So that somewhat interesting, but how do you break the internet? I mean, anyone who knows how the internet runs, you can't really break the internet. You can break your access to it, but it's just a bunch of computers that are linked. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that. But I must say, I've lost just a little interest. I think it's going to be for the kids. I mean, anytime you have Thanksgiving movies, I remember once it was one of the Star Wars movies came out on Thanksgiving, and it was packed. But honestly, Darren, I don't know if this one's going to be packed. It'll be packed with kids, but I don't know if kids will get the jokes. You know what I mean?
Yes, that I don't know if they've decided to dumb it down needlessly. Don't know if they needed to dumb it down. It seemed to be quite an adult themed movie with enough comedy to satisfy the whole audience the first time round. I don't. Again, it's one of these where they've decided they want to make an animated sequel. It's like, oh, we made money with this. Let's just cash in and see what
Yeah.
we can do. So, we'll see how that one goes,
Yes.
shall we say. We'll move on to the next one. And if I'm honest, this is probably going to be my pick for the one I most want to see this month. And that is going to be Widows. This is directed by Steve McQueen, who gave us 12 Years a Slave a couple of years ago. And it follows a bunch of widows who must complete a bank job after their husbands are killed while trying to do this job because they owed their boss a lot of money. Now, this is one of the most star-studded casts of the year. If we are to just go through Oscar-nominated, Oscar-winning actors, it is ridiculous. Like, but then you've also got some up-and-comers. And, well, the best way to describe this is if you were to look at the poster, you have Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Elizabeth Debicki, Cynthia Erivo, who's meant to be brilliant in Bad Times at the El Real, Colin Farrell, Brian Trehenry, Daniel Kahula from Get Out, Jackie Weaver, Kerry Coon, Robert Duvall, and Liam Neeson. So we have a great cast. We have a great director. We have a thriller that's just meant to bend the rules a little bit. And it has had a lot of buzz. And it's just something that you feel like you need to be able to watch, not learn anything about beforehand. I can't wait to see a bit of a twist on the thriller. So that's why I want to see this one the most. Where do you stand?
Not really interested. Yeah, I mean, I hate, you know, I used to, movies that I really didn't get a vibe from, I used to just say, oh, I don't care about that. I think that was kind of immature, so I'm going to withhold complete judgment. But this is probably not one that I'm going to go see. I did like 12 Years a Slave. Boy, I really enjoyed that. Michael Fassbender, you just wanted to walk up to him on the street and wring his neck. I mean,
I would like to point out, I don't think anyone enjoyed 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah,
it was good.
us film critics, when we say enjoyed, it means something different. It means your insides got wrung out, and that's what we've learned to like. Something that evokes a historical response in me, though, I can honestly say I do enjoy it. So that one definitely did that for me. I went home and I looked up when it was, what was going on. You know, compared it to the time, at the time I happened to be, I think maybe even on this show, we were talking about The Color Purple, I believe, or I was just thinking about it, one or the other. And I wanted to find out the disparity on the timeline. I remember that specifically. To get me looking up history, it's got to be a good movie. So when I say enjoy, yeah, I more mean like provoked a response. It definitely provoked a response. But this one, yeah, mob bosses and all that. I'm sort of into that, but it's not. It has to really have somebody that I really want to see in it, and it really doesn't. So, sorry.
I will say that Daniel Kahula looks really weird with the whole thing where he tries to get in someone's face in the trailer. It just feels like
that's
way
why you want to go.
It just doesn't look right. Like, it makes me start to think the Get Out may have been a fluke for him. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
Well, we'll go on to the third one then, and I'm gonna go with Overlord. This story follows two American soldiers that end up behind enemy lines on D-Day, and they find a base with experiments being conducted by the Nazis, I think, and decide they want to investigate. And it looks very weird, but also a bit generic. I saw my very first trailer for this last week, actually. And all I've heard is everyone say how the trailer's amazing. You're going to want to watch it. It's going to be the best thing ever. Yeah. And the trailer left me a bit meh. I didn't really get much from the trailer. It didn't seem like it was that special. My main interest in this is if there is going to be some form of twist to be involved in the Cloverfield universe. It was rumoured a long time ago, but after the Paradox problem, it may not be anymore. So that's my interest mainly. I just would like to see where is it going to fit into something else. Is it just going to be another, here are the Nazis, they did bad stuff in the war, and they were experimenting on people, and this is what happened, even though nothing actually would have happened like this. Because it's a story that's really lazy to write, really simple to give us. We've seen it many times. Like, there's a trilogy of movies called Outpost, which is basically this all over again. And I would rather, and I, we saw Army of Frankenstein, which was a really weird one.
Yeah. You know,
seeing that. So I feel like this has been done. I just would like there to be some really clever, like, twist concept to it, to maybe connect it to something other than just this. But anyway, that's my feelings with this one. Where do you stand on Overlord?
You know, you said earlier that you would see it in another film in a non-traditional format, or I forget the word you used, but it was well said, and I sort of feel the same way. I don't think I'm going to pay to see this in my local theater, even though I get one free ticket, I think it's every month, and I get discounts and all that. This one I'd rather see at home, but I do want to see it. I think everybody who has seen Schindler's List or The Piano, I mean, I could go on. My mind has kind of stopped on those two, but I mean, there's just movie after movie after movie. What's the one that with Brad Pitt?
Inglourious
Basterds. There's another one too, not with Brad Pitt, but there's another one similar to that. I saw one recently, reviewed it on my blog Right on Film, and it was about the final days in Hitler's bunker. It was pretty good.
Downfall.
Yeah, that was pretty good, and but it was super long. I even said that, so you know, that's not from the hip. I actually published that. It's a little bit long, and this one, when I look at it, I think, wow, I think probably just from movies alone, and then reading books in high school and stuff, I've probably know just about everything about Hitler, short of reading Mein Kampf. And so I'm with you. It sort of needs some new twist on it. I hope it has some other thing to it. There's another film too that's really good where they're going out to assassinate. You remember that one? It's not Inglourious Basterds, but it's similar to that.
You got Valkyrie.
Yeah, Valkyrie. And so,
The ones that are based on historical fact are good. I will watch them. But this one clearly looks like it's some form of scientific experiments, which, again, I would accept, like, if you look at, like, Iron Sky, just for example, like, the Nazis left America, left Germany, and went and lived on a base on the other side of the moon for 40 years before building a base in Antarctica with dinosaurs. It's like, okay, that's a bit bonkers, but you'll remember that. And the fact that there's sequels, it's something outside the box, and it's a bit ridiculous. It plays on rumours of what the Nazis were up to outside of the horrors that they did commit.
Yeah.
But it's something that you're going to remember. It's also, and then again, it's also really lazy just to create a news.
Well, that's kind of what I'm trying to say by you're helping me name some of them, but just by naming all these films, The Zookeeper's Wife with Jessica Chastain, that's another one. I mean, they just keep firing and firing and firing. Maybe it's time we just give them a little break, you know?
But and then, again, all of these are like real stories about real people, which is slightly different. Like, if you're going to play, it's just laziness. You've put in Inglourious Basterds, right? Because it is a fictionalized killing of Hitler in a movie theater. It's they're the ones. It's when you use the Nazis in a story just because you need a villain for the time. Like, well, Indiana Jones.
Quentin Tarantino knows how to pick his subject matter well, and we'll talk about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I'm sure, a little bit later.
Yeah. But, but you could also use, like, Indiana Jones as an example of just not being able to create a good or an original villain. So,
yeah, it's the motives. You gotta set those motives. And, you know, another thing too is, like, when people debate, like in the States now, we're hearing a lot of debating. Our president will say something, and then the Democrats will come back against him, and they'll just, there's so much debating going on. I suppose it's good for young people because they're sort of learning how debating works. But a lot of times in the past, in my life, Congress has, and also the president or whoever's are debating, bring up Hitler. And when they do, it's almost become like unbelievable. Like no one even listens. They just dismiss it, you know? Oh, well, you know what? Hitler had a border and Hitler didn't let people in his border. And almost it's just like a surefire way of losing the other side. Do you know what I mean? Because they just go, oh, he's talking about Hitler, forget it. You know, and they just shut him down. So it's so overused in argumentation. It's almost people have almost stopped saying the name Hitler or Nazi. That Nazis did that, you know. So, you know, this could be good. I want to see. I'm actually talking about it. I kind of want to see it now, but I sort of feel like we're overloaded.
Yes, I think I'm lucky because I think it's a secret personal type of limitless screening they're doing a week early, so I
Oh.
can go and see that with all of the other members of the community. See
Oh,
if
I'll be
actually.
watching your blog, Movie Reviews 101 for that. I'll
Yes,
want to see what you thought of that.
I'm questioning my thought senses already, but no. Well, we'll go just into the final one for our first four before we get into the question round of the conversation. And the final one is going to be Creed 2. Now, the first Creed came out, and a few people turned their heads and weren't sure. And then they saw it, and it was like, wow, that's brilliant. Then we had the Oscars, and everyone was like, Stallone's going to win Best Supporting Actor, I guarantee. And he lost. No. Spoiler there, everyone knows. And it made a lot of money, had all the buzz, and then everyone's like, well, we kind of got to do another one now. So they brought back Ivan Drago's son to face Apollo, and his dad obviously killed Apollo's dad, or Athena's, well, I forgot what his bloody name is.
I'm not that familiar with it. I did like it though. I did like the original Creed.
But his dad was killed by Ivan Drago in Rocky III. So now his son's come back, and it's going to be, it's almost like the grudge match. Is he going to fight him for the right thing? It's Adonis, Michael B. Jordan's character. So Apollo was his dad who got killed. So Adonis versus Drago. And we've also got Dolph Lundgren coming back. Yes, we have Stallone and Lundgren doing another movie. And every time they seem to team up, they generally go straight to video. But we do have Michael B. Jordan and Tessa Thompson. So we have all the faith in the world with those two. I think that the last one was shot as one of the best boxing movies of recent years, as in the glamour of a championship fight, how it's evolved into a pretty much WWE-like style preview where we have all of the I'm better than you, you're better than me, etc. nonsense that goes on in press conferences. But this time it's going to be personal, so I'm in to see where we go. So where do you
All
stand?
right. I really liked the first movie. Really liked it. And I really liked the Pineapple Express as well that had help me. Is it Michael B. Jordan? Is that his
Pineapple
name?
Express.
Is that his name though? I want to make sure I say his name correctly.
That is his name, but I don't remember him in the Pineapple Express.
I don't know why I said Pineapple Express. Oh gosh, the one I meant was now it's lost. Fruitvale Station. There it is.
Very different movies.
Totally different movies. My wife would thump me on the back of the head for that one. Sorry about that. Fruitvale Station. Yeah, really great film. And you know, a lot of people haven't seen that film. And I really recommend it. It's a true story of a racially motivated event that occurred. And, like I said, it really happened, and he's in that. And again, it's Michael B. Jordan, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. And he is a phenomenal force in that movie. And I hate to say this because who the hell am I to criticize an actor? But I just feel like he's gotten really full of himself ever since then. And I have a hard time watching him in movies now. I would prefer him to tone it down and be a little bit more humble. And I'm sure he has no interest in that criticism, but I think he's a really, really good actor. And Fruitvale Station, if he would have continued along that path, self-effacing kind of acting, then I think he would have been great. But I think that, even in Black Panther, people will probably argue with me because it's just done so well. Love the movie, but even his character in that movie, it's just the same thing. He seems to think so much of himself. So I'm not really probably going to see this film for that reason. I just, it's the same way, kind of in, and I don't know if we're going to talk about this, probably not, but, kind of seeing Lady Gaga in a film, you're constantly thinking that she's not being genuine when maybe she is, but she's a rock star, not really an actor. So I don't know what he is or what he thinks he is, but Creed 2 to me is just like cashing in on his popularity. And so I don't really see it as like amazing acting coming my way. Do you know what I mean? Or am I totally off base? What do you think?
It's difficult because he does have to play a lot of quite loud characters recently. Like Killmonger had to be quite arrogant and loud because he was on. That's the type of character he was designed to be.
Right.
In a any boxer is loud, brash, arrogant. So
Yeah.
it's the right persona for the film. But then when you see some crap like Fahrenheit 451, he might not actually be as special as people were saying.
Yeah.
I think he's on a bit of a paycheck role where I don't mind an actor doing that for a couple of years. They
Yeah.
sometimes you need to do it just to make sure you can have a secure life and then do a few more indie projects like a Fruitvale Station.
Right.
We see all the best people do this. They'll turn up in the most random films that you would. If you look at certain actors, you're like, that doesn't seem right for them. But then suddenly, there they are. It's like, actually, that was a good choice. So, it's something the best actors are capable of doing both. And we'll get to see where he goes next. I don't have anything against the guy right now. But then again, when you are hot property, you get Oscar buzzed. And you're also younger than the rest of the generation. Add in the fact that he's a black actor that people probably would like to see get Oscar nominated. And
Yeah.
if he does stay on top, there's a good 40, 50, 60 year career out of him where he could
Yeah.
be argued he could be the next Denzel.
Yeah,
That's
he's probably not hearing that kind of criticism from everybody, but I just feel like if he just, and I'm not talking about not being loud, it's different than that. It's more well, like take Michael Clarke Duncan. I saw him on an interview years ago. May he rest in peace. And he said, I think it was after the Green Mile, but or no, it had to be after that. Anyway, it was toward the last, third of his life, really his career, I was gonna say, but his life. And he said to the interviewer that he really wanted to be like Denzel, but he knows that his appearance won't fit into too many roles, and it was such a self-effacing answer. It was very like, I really want to do a whole bunch of different kinds of roles, and that's what I'm going to try and do. But I know I probably won't be able to do that many because of my flaws. That's what I heard him say. And I don't know, I just think it would go a long way with Michael Jordan if he would just say that, something like that, or just show that a little bit in a role. So who knows? Maybe he did that in Creed 2. Maybe I need to go see it and have a new appreciation for him. But if it's just a bunch of yelling and I'm on top and I'm so mean and here's another ad for a boxing match, which I already see in the regular world, I don't need to see him on screen. I don't know that it's going to work for me. And you take Rocky, for example. He was very humble. He didn't believe he was going to do much at all. But he got coached that way and ended up doing it. So,
And there's a slight difference between Rocky and Adonis, but
I'm sure there's lots, but
just to put this in perspective for you, since 2015, Michael B. Jordan has only been in 5 films. So it's more that the films he's in are very talked about. I'm not going to use the word successful because I'm going to tell you the films. Fantastic Four.
Yes.
Creed.
Yes.
And he doesn't do another film until Black Panther. You think there's a 3-year gap where he doesn't do a film.
Okay.
And it's Fahrenheit 451 and a movie called Kin, which I've never heard of. So that's all he's done in 3 years. So maybe it's just the perception of he's been thrown into the spotlight a bit too much, and it's more the perception that's been given to him. He does seem to be picking roles rather than taking everyone that's coming like Samuel Jackson does. And before that, it's only, if you go back to Fruitvale, it's not, it was actually Chronicle that probably made him famous. But he hasn't really got that many films to his name, not gonna lie. If you go through his list, it's not many.
I'm surprised about that 3-year gap. That surprises me.
There's a few video games and shorts, but there's nothing. But that's probably filming Black Panther. I think Fahrenheit 451 had a few technical issues. Well, when you see the movie.
Well, we'll have to see how Creed 2 does. Personally, I'll probably see it at home. Just because I don't normally go to see boxing movies in the theater. Really like Southpaw. I really like Creed 1. I really liked Rocky and most of the sequels. But yeah, I think this time I'll be saving it for the sci-fi horror, just the normal stuff I see.
Okay. Well, we'll go just quickly through the rest of the list before we talk about one more major release. It's going to be a very simple yes or no answer. I am going to give a little bit more attention to a movie that only appeared to me about 2 days ago and has somehow become my most essential watching movie I'm ever going to see. But we'll get to that one. And I do believe you may have already seen some of these over your side of the pond.
Yes.
So the list is Juliet Naked.
Don't know anything about it.
Wildlife.
No, I would love to talk about it, but let me see if I can put it all in a sentence. Carey Mulligan's creeping me out in that one, but Paul Dano directed it, and I would give blood for that guy. So I'm probably going to see it because the director's premiere debut, Paul Dano, did Wildlife. So I'll probably see it for that.
Fair enough. The Girl in the Spider's Web.
No way.
I saw the first trailer for that. It looks terrible.
Oh my god! We shouldn't laugh at things, but jeez.
I like Claire Foy. She's fantastic, but it doesn't look like the right type of role for her.
Yeah.
But The Grinch is coming back in November.
It's like, you know, this is Sony Animation, I think. And Sony Animation doesn't seem to take many chances. They just do the movies that are going to work. So why not pick The Grinch? I mean, that's like the ultimate safe bet. So yeah, and it's a safe bet with me. I'm going to go see it.
The Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald.
I should probably let you say something on that one, because you know I have very little interest in the Harry Potter universe.
I've never really had interest in the Harry Potter universe, but
I thought you did.
Though I've seen them all once, and that's enough for me, just to see what all the buzz was. No interest. We have, they might as well just call this movie yet another Robin Hood movie.
Yeah.
It looks terrible.
It really does.
Why was Taron Egerton doing this?
I don't know. I don't know.
He's doing more problem stuff than Michael B. Jordan taking every role.
Yeah, I could probably give him some career advice. Call me, Taron. Let's talk.
Assassination Nation.
That is one I've seen. So
Yes. Was it good or bad?
It's Vern.
It's Vern.
There's a lot of good to it, but
it's quirky.
Vern has exploded it out there so far beyond the good that it is. But you know, there's good to it. It surprised me how good, you know, that it was that as good as it was, but it's not definitely not great.
Okay. There is another Serenity movie.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of the preview and I saw what it was. I was like, okay. Yeah.
Mysterious Questions.
Oh, I thought those were the mysterious questions you were going to ask me.
I don't even know
what that is.
It might be a fail. It might be my part of my notes. We'll never know.
I think it is.
Well, the final one I just want to give a quick mention to is called Anna and the Apocalypse.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen...
been following that for, I don't know, a year? It's been on Internet Movie Database for like a year.
There's a headline on the still for the poster. It says, Shaun of the Dead meets La La Land. And it's a zombie musical at Christmas. It's like, why do I need to see this movie now? Like, just make it happen. Make this a real movie for everyone. It is due out in England at the end of November, which has pleased me greatly. I don't know.
Maybe we can talk these people into making Creed 3 a musical.
No, I'm sure they'll make a proper Creed movie.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I haven't heard any of the music. I've just been trying to see it for a year because it keeps showing up as a new up-and-coming movie, but I guess it was delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed. But it is in another language, I believe.
I thought it was in English, but...
Really? Okay.
And the clip I saw was a girl singing in English.
Yeah, I haven't seen that clip. I'll have to check it out. I'm really interested in that.
And there's a trailer out and about. So if you follow them on Twitter, they're pumping it like mad on there. So, yeah. So now it is time for the questions that we always like to ask each other and see where we are. So we're going to go straight to you, Damien, so you can have a little bit of a talk about Suspiria. And it circulates around your question.
Yes, yes. Well, what are the terms under which you think remakes should be made? Do you think there are too many being made? And it's most likely to be around the Suspiria discussion. But let's face it, this is the era of the remake. I won't bring prequels or sequels into this, but they'd be part of the same chapter. Because I think, I don't know, Halloween is an interesting film, you know. It's getting these incredible reviews. It's up in the 80s on Metacritic. And I have to sit with myself and go, why do I think that's different? So maybe I'm on... That's a sequel, supposed to be two, which irritates me. But anyways, there's a lot of things that irritate me about that movie. I'll hold off on that. But I will just say that in order to make a sequel, in order to make a remake of a film, you have to be number one. This is the number one thing, and I've had a lot of time to think about this. The number one thing is that you have to be bringing the experience to a different generation. I really believe that. And so sometimes that's going to involve different technology. It's going to involve, I don't know, in some cases, a shorter attention span. Right now, we're in a very short attention span time for movies. They have to get to stuff real quick because people just don't really want to invest. So... But, you know, I'll say Hereditary was not a remake, but it kind of copied a lot of older Satan-based films. And that one was really long and elongated, and people seem to have attention, you know, no problem with that attention span. But I think, you know, that's just the point. Whether it needs more attention span or less attention span for the audience that you're aiming at. And if you're not bringing anything that's translated for a new generation, then you shouldn't remake it. So that's one thing. Another thing is it good enough story to where it could stand on its own? Because frankly, most people don't really care if it's a remake. They just want to go to the movies and see a movie. So those two things, you have to have substantial newness to a new audience, and is it worth watching just for your average Joe who's going to walk in? So I think as long as those two things work, you know, I think a remake could happen. Darren, you got any ideas?
Well, the way I look at it is technology-based is the biggest influence for me to say a remake's okay. And my best example of this is The Fly. Now, if you were to watch the Vincent Price version of The Fly now, it is one of the most comically hilarious movies you're ever going to watch. But in 1958, I think it was when it came out, it was shocking to see a bloke with a fly head on. And then they brought out David Cronenberg's version, which is still probably the best ever remake ever made in terms of improvement quality. But that is only because the makeup effects have been improved. Everything around how you make a movie has changed and become more influential. So that's why I think technology-based stuff is important for remakes. Then I also think that if you can reimagine a story. So the best example is, talking of a modern movie, is A Star Is Born. And while I haven't seen the new version, I'm pretty sure it's going to be using the internet to pump this person's fame.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is, like, if you were to be when the original came out, it would have been newspapers or maybe one radio station or one television station that would have played this person's music. But now there's so many mediums to make this person famous. And that's what makes it sort of special in its own little way of showing it's like, there are other ways to become famous now, which, again, if you're talented, you deserve to be at the top. And talking about the quality of the film is not going to be part of this point. But then there's also one way of looking at remakes where they get branded as a remake, a bit like what you were saying about Hereditary. Is my best example is any action movie that is a hero against a villain in a building of some sort is called Die Hard In. So Die Hard on a bus for speed, Die Hard in a plane for Air Force One. It's that sort of movie. And in a weird way, that is a remake of the same story.
Mm-hmm.
But it is original as well because it isn't just the same things happening. The style is the same. Like the cliff notes will be the same of how you get to each point. But those all work. It's when you get really lazy and do subtitle remakes. You don't need to do them. Looking at most of the Asian boom of horror, because especially in the American cinema world, they don't know how to increase the tension as well as the Asians do with things like The Ring, The Grudge, One Missed Call, etc. And when they got remade, I Saw the Devil. That hasn't been remade, but
you can tell the way that they crunched that suspense in that is amazing.
But of the ones that have been remade, they've all been kind of watered down a lot. You don't care that much. But then you can remake in a way like, as we know, James Wan has boarded the train for the Train to Busan remake as a producer of some sort. And everyone's like, you can't remake it. But let's hold up and go, imagine if this was in the New York tube stations and that train was going around them. Imagine how interesting that would actually be. But you've seen Train to Busan. You've probably been to New York once or twice.
I've never been to New York, but I'll tell you, I've been to... Well, you know, I went to Maryland and I had a layover there, and I went to Washington, D.C., and in Washington, D.C., they do have, similar to New York, they have subways. So I did ride on the subways. They don't really have them here at all in California. But, yeah, I remember how they looked. And he'll have to change the name to, like, you know,
It's not
subway to L.A. or not
you,
L.A.
You know what I mean? It would just be a train journey between, like, bits of America. But you don't need to just do a from Seoul to Busan and call it Train to Busan. It will be a reimagining of the same idea of a father trying to help his daughter get from A to B on a train with zombies outside. That's all it
I'm
will need
just,
to
as
be.
you're talking, I feel like I'm just going into a trance trying to imagine what that movie's going to look like, because you're the first that's I've the first I've heard of it. As you know, I'm a huge as you are I'm a huge James Wan fan. I'm also a huge Train to Busan fan, and I kind of wish that he hadn't done
That's what I mean.
that.
I don't want him to do one from Seoul to Busan, but I would like to see him do one in a train zombie movie. It won't be him directing it. There's no way he's directing it.
No, he
But
doesn't do that. So like,
I would be interested to see it in another city, another country, a different culture. You could imagine it working, but everyone's just like, you can't remake it. It's like, if they made a sequel, they're not going to do Train to Busan 2 and have the same journey because it's the trains are gone now. It's not happening. So what's the difference between them doing it in a different location, in a different language, than what George A. Romero did with his Of the Dead movies? Like, they're not direct sequels in any way imaginable, apart from Survival of the Dead and Diary of the Dead. There's no sequels in any of them. So
Yeah.
why does it need to be classed as a remake? Why can't it just be classed as an American sequel?
Well, it all comes down to one thing, really. Maybe not in James Wan's case, but money. You know, I mean, they want to make money. They want to get people in the door because they already know the brand. Because learning the brand on little YouTube trailers and podcasts like ours and all the podcasts and just different ways that people get exposed, television and such. I mean, you know, that's how they have to create the brand. They didn't have to create the brand of Wreck-It Ralph, because it was already created. They see it. Oh, that, yeah. You know, they looks I'm noticing in 2019 they're going to come out with oh gosh, what's that musical? My wife loved it, Witches or something. Anyway, Wicked, there you go. Sorry, I'm not a huge fan of Wicked, but I like the music. Anyway, you know, Wicked is already established as a brand. So when people see Wicked is coming to my local theater, they're gonna go just because they want to compare it, you know. So it's sad. It's sad that all this money is being put into remakes when we could be developing new ideas, new thoughts, original ideas.
I
So
think
there I go, blah blah
that's
blah.
what my point with the Train to Busan one. It won't necessarily be a remake, it would be a reimagining. And I think about it the other way, The Departed to Infernal Affairs. Infernal Affairs is three very long movies that Scorsese and co. dropped down to one 2.5 hour movie and won an Oscar for. And it's fantastic. So there are exceptions to it that work. But then there are things like Halloween, like Friday the 13th, like Evil Dead, like Nightmare on Elm Street, that just, oh crap, we ran out of ideas. Let's get a young director who's pretty clueless and give them a little bit more money than normal to do exactly the same story and make it boring. So, but then we've also been having, as we've already talked about, Creed is a glorified remake of Rocky, just by, and Mad Max Fury Road is a remake, but it's also a sequel. It's a reboot. The Star Wars Force Awakens and co, that they are remakes, sequels, reboots almost. Like, for I don't care what people say, Force Awakens is a glorified remake of New Hope, just with some familiar faces. We saw it with Creed, I say. We had it with Jurassic World. Did it, and there was one other, and I can never remember all four when I try and have this conversation, but they're
Like
doing
Jurassic.
now of like Creed, it's Creed, Mad Max, Jurassic World, and there was another one that year that came out that wasn't very good, but that happened quite a lot. That's what Halloween has done this year. It's like, let's not make a remake, we'll make a sequel, but it might as well just be a remake. So, But anyway, and this comes back because you want to see Suspiria, which is a remake.
Yeah, yeah, and I have seen the first one. Yeah, this is weird because I, like, you know, it's like when I met you, Darren, I was starting to review movies, and ever since then, I really wanted to be taken seriously for my opinions, but I have to say that, you know, like, this classic film, I fell asleep. You know, I mean, it just didn't do it for me. I watched it again later, and I got through a little bit more of it, and it's the original I'm talking about. And, you know, it's like a whodunit. It's like a mystery. And, yeah, horror, because there's blood, but it's not really my style of horror where you have a sense of creepiness that you take with you. That's my style of horror. To me, the second one is filled with glamorous people. So I feel like they're kind of appealing to glamorous people to go see it. Like, it's the thing to do because it's glamorous. But as far as a story, I don't, you know, I can't honestly say that I'm going to even see this one. I just don't have the desire to. So I'll hand it over to you.
See, it's one of these where when I first really got into movies, the only way you would learn about anything new was watching top 10 worst or top 10 best.
Right.
And Suspiria and Argenta especially appeared on like horror films that either were notoriously banned in England because of graphic nature. And Suspiria and Deep Red were the ones that always got talked about because... Mm-hmm. So there've always been a bit of a buzz about these movies that they're the ones that you heard about, but they were so mysterious. Like, what's so special about this? So you couldn't get a copy of it because you would only have VHS, and they were very rare on VHS because they were from the '70s and they were banned and everything. Yeah. So it's just when they finally came out and people saw them, I don't think I've seen the first one. If I'm honest, it's one of these where I've seen bits of them, but they've never been on at the right times and never around to finish them.
Right.
I know he's very artsy Argento with his direction. He pushed the boundaries of special effects a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something you saw a lot from the Italian directors in the late 70s, early 80s. If you were to look at most of Argento's work, as I say, Deep Red, I think, is Argento.
I'm going to tell you right now because I don't even know how much longer I'll be a movie critic because I'm getting so old here. I'm 49, but all the actors are so much younger than me, and writers. But I'll tell you what, I have all the Argento movies on my watch list, on my Internet Movie Database watch list, and they've been there for like a year, and I'd never watch them. So, I mean, that should be some kind of sign, if not to you guys out there, but... I mean, I'd rather watch other movies than just this impressionistic maestro who's so amazing. But honestly, when I start his movies, I go to sleep.
I'd say it, but I think at the time they were quite shocking for their gore. The thing putting me off the remake is the fact it's 2.5 hours long.
Yeah. I know, they're all really long, too.
Well, the original's only an hour and a half, so...
I did like Deep Red. I will say that. I did enjoy Deep Red. Very convoluted story, but when it starts to come together... Oh, and then there's another thing. They're subtitles. All these films are subtitles, too, so a lot of people don't have the patience for those. But Deep Red is one I enjoyed.
But again, I don't mind the subtitle side of it, but...
Yeah.
It was something that was really a big thing, like, with the Italian directors really pushing boundaries, and there's always, as I say, mystique. So obviously they did Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
And those sort of movies. So they were always quite edgy in the 80s, like, a bit like what Wes Craven was trying to do, but to a new level of craziness. Mm. So, and because cinema was only talked about on the outside, like, you, as I said, unless you knew a friend in person or a pen pal, you wouldn't have heard of these when you were younger or in the 90s. And that's the point of them. Like, they just weren't accessible at the time. But now, It's, here's this movie, you should have seen it. It was an extreme horror. It was on the ban list in England for 10 years because of one scene. There's so many films that have been on this list that are so soft to watch now.
Eyes Without a Face is one of it. I sort of laughed that it was banned, but it actually did enjoy it. But it's such a slow burn, so long, and by today's standards, they just weren't. It's just different. So they could actually that's a good example. They could remake that one and do it in a sort of a modern way, and they kind of did with The Skin I Live In. Remember that one with Antonio Banderas? That one was pretty good, but I don't think it was a remake, but it's similar concepts. So it just depends on if you can bring something new, you know, to the new audience, to the new people. But like for me, I have to be honest and say I'm kind of a horror guy. I'm a modern horror fan. That's what I mostly review. That's what I mostly like. The other stuff is cool too, but you know, when I look at that old horror stuff, it's just so different. I think what horror was back then was very different from what it is today.
And again, you probably were only getting 8 to 10 films in any major release.
Absolutely.
And you couldn't go and watch them at home afterwards, anything
Absolutely
else.
Not.
And that's the difference. Like horror, all movies are so accessible in any form of medium now. There's just not really much mystique about them. I was having this conversation about biopics recently. It's like, if you were to go back 20 years, you might have 2 biopics a year, and they were like, wow, that's an amazing story. But now there's like 2 a month, maybe. And it's like, so what? And you watch them, and like, that bit's good. But it's some of the moments in biopics are, this is where this person picked up a spoon and ate their dinner. And it's like, don't need to see this. It's not that interesting. It's like, we'll get to this a bit more when we get to talk about First Man. But there's a bit of stuff you don't need everything. Like, blockbusters are saturating. It's like, but then the drama's like, you've just come out of like London Film Festival was a few weeks ago, or just finishing now, I think. And it's 14 days, I think, of movies. And they're all Oscar bait movies, nearly. And then suddenly, you're going to be... Well, it's the same as, like, Toronto Film Festival and everything.
Yeah.
It's just... It's going to be the same sort of films being shown. There's nothing new going to be shown there. But they're all going to be, look at me, I've made an Oscar movie that 3 million people were going to pay to see, compared to 300 million to go and see Black Panther or something. So the medium is very skewed at the moment. Like, if you look at the best picture winners from 30 to 40 years ago, people actually went to the cinema to see them. Now, people don't care because there's so much easy to watch movies out there.
Because we should probably move on, but that's definitely a good discussion about remakes, I'd say.
Well, my question for you then is about release dates. Now, why is there a big gap in release dates worldwide? Like, my best example is the fact that Ant-Man and the Wasp came out 6 weeks later in America. Well, Infinity War got a global release. Most blockbusters generally get a global release. But what does this cause to the audience? Like, people spoiling it? Like Ant-Man and the Wasp.
There's got to be something that you're waiting for at all times, it seems like. I mean, you know, I'll come home, because what I generally do is for this, I won't really call it a job because I don't get paid, but, you know, it's kind of become a job to me. I take it very seriously, reviewing movies and doing my podcast. And when I come home from the movie, first thing I do is write a review. And this, you know, when I'm doing that, I always look up Metacritic, and I want to see what the bigwig said. Sometimes I'll look at it before the movie. Okay, I'll admit, Darren's not going to let me lie. I look at it before I go to the movies. But you probably shouldn't when you're a critic. You probably should just go But I want to know, before I go. And so it's usually in line with what I thought. So that's kind of nice. But I get home and recently I saw a movie and I'm not even going to try and think of what it was. It was Smallfoot or something, just inconsequential film. Let's just say it's Smallfoot. And let's just say Smallfoot comes out in the UK. It's probably out now already. But let's just pretend. Movie X, okay? It comes out in the UK in a week from now. So I'll sit down to do my review, and I look up Metascore, and it's got this ticker. And I haven't seen the ticker except till the last, 6 months. It's something they added. And it's a ticker, and it says, this film comes out in 5 days minus counting, and then I'll show you the countdown. Well, that's talking about some legitimate country. That's talking about UK. It's talking about maybe Australia. I don't know where. But somewhere financially important, it has not come out yet. So they're not publishing the Metacritic score. And that's very interesting to me because that shows me that what they're doing is they are actually afraid. They're afraid of the scores. And they think that if people don't go to see their movie, it's going to be because they publish the score. And I've seen on other sites too, not just Metacritic. But, that right there, I think, is my answer to your question. I mean, they need to quit making things come out later. We live in a world economy now where anybody can go on the internet and see how a movie did or read a review. You can still get to a lot of reviews, by the way. So I don't really know what they think they're stopping. You could do a search on a movie that's not out yet in the UK, and it will give you a full review of it. Do you guys see that over there?
Yeah, well, there is a very, very big example of one.
Okay, go ahead. What is it?
This movie comes out in December. Mm-hmm. Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah. I think that might be the one. No, there was one that did that for me. It could have been that one. I don't think it's that one, though. But I saw that months ago.
That's been out since about April or May in America. It's out on DVD in America.
Yeah.
And it's not even...
it's not there yet.
It's hitting the cinemas in December.
Wow.
And to think the amount of buzz around that movie. For example, Eighth Grade, I still don't think has a release date in England.
Well, that could be a demographics thing. They might be thinking that an American story about an eighth grader is not going to make a lot of money.
When it's one that gets as much award buzz as that, you think you would try?
People are curious. Yeah.
It's not going to cost much to put it in the cinema, I'll put it that way.
I think that you would be better off to tell me why you think you guys don't get them till later, because I think it benefits the movie itself, the franchise of the movie, all the people involved and their bottom line, if it comes out at the same time. I would think that that would benefit everybody because it's like a explosion of going to the movies. And once that explosion's over of population of people going in the door, paying for their ticket, like say, my movie X over here has already come out. Everybody's seen it, written about it, whatever. Even if they withhold the ratings, you guys are waiting another couple months. That explosion has already kind of happened. You'll get a smaller explosion, but people get what they want to get. I really believe that. And if they want to get the movie, they'll get it.
Well, I understand why there was the Ant-Man issue. I completely understand that. And that was the World Cup issue, which the studios knew that the football is generally going to be on in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't want to risk potentially two nights a week where couples wouldn't even consider going to the cinema if they were invested in the football, which is fair enough. That would make sense. But even though Ant-Man bombed at the cinema for Marvel anyway, and I would say it bombed altogether, but you know what I mean? Less than 500 million is pretty bad for a Marvel movie. It was a pretty boring Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then
I say we drill it down. Sorry, go ahead, finish.
And that was acceptable. It's more the very small ones, especially when it's not really a holiday for us, but the Thanksgiving weekend's quite big in America. And I'm not going to, shall I test you on which weekend that is in America?
it's usually I think it's the third Thursday.
So it would be about November 20-ish,
mm-hmm.
say. So in England, on the 21st of November, we get Robin Hood and the Girl in the Spider's Web.
Yes.
It's like, is that really
Yeah.
going to set the world alight? It proves it's not a very big holiday.
But families go out
But they're not
here.
even family films. Like,
Yeah.
so you're probably going to get Wreck-It Ralph a week earlier.
Yeah.
We get it on the 30th. But again, it comes back to when you look at the Oscar-y movies like Shape of Water, etc. Then none of them
Well,
were
I
being
liked what you
shown.
said about sorry to bother you, because that was one of my favorite films. It's probably in my top five, maybe, of the year so far. And so, tell me about that. What is your anticipation, like, on behalf of the whole country? What do you think people are thinking about that movie? Are they super excited for it to come to theaters, or do you think it's really decayed, and now they don't really care?
I think the people who want to talk about movies will go and see it, but the rest of the population don't care.
I
I
gotcha.
would probably say that was the same as the reaction in America. I don't think
Yeah.
it would have appealed to the casual film fan. I don't think it had anything to make everyone go, oh, look. But that's what most debut films do. It didn't have anything catchy about it.
Yeah. Well, that's a there's lots of things we could just say or think about as possibilities, but I mean, just to throw this out there, because, you know, I love all people. I don't mean it to in a pejorative way, but I'm just saying, can you think of any very dominant African American films that were out when that came out in the UK?
When it comes out in the UK.
I just mean where it came out here. Like if they could have done it at the same time, I'm trying to figure out why they didn't have it come out where you are.
You have to remember, it barely made the cinemas until Buzz started saying it was really good in America.
I see.
I've got to just check what week it came out in America.
Yeah,
first.
It is at times side-splitting hilarious at times. At other times, it's very deep and makes a message similar to Get Out.
Well, if
so,
we're going to be
yeah.
honest, it was during the World Cup again.
Okay.
You had it mid-July. So
they probably weren't thinking anybody was going to go to the movies.
No, and that was pretty much at the time when you had Mission Impossible and stuff like that on the fences.
Yeah,
so
well,
that
that
was
makes sense.
And it was just at the start of the school summer holidays, and it's not really a summer holiday movie for kids.
Exactly, it's definitely not.
So, but that's a little bit about release dates then.
Good discussion.
But we've had a few former guests ask us some questions. So we're going to go in with Zoe from Zobo with a Shotgun, our favourite horror queen. She asked us about what films we're looking forward to seeing in 2019. So Damien, have you got any written down, or do I guess what your number one is going to be?
I don't know what you'll guess, Darren, but to be honest... It's not a very good looking list, to be honest. I was kind of disappointed by it, but I'm just going to give you one off the top. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's by Quentin Tarantino. Apparently it's the story of Charles Manson.
Yes.
So I'm interested in that. And it's funny that I picked that, because I know Zoe fairly well. She's been on my show. She's been on this show, and The Lamb. And I've gone to her site numerous times and read some of her extensive writing on horror. It's very good. I'll just plug it. It's what is it? It's not Zobo with a Shotgun, is it? I think it is. I think it's ZoboWithAShotgun.com. I hope I'm getting that right. But at any rate, her big thing is Charles Manson. If you look at her Letterboxd on all her stuff, she's got all this Charles Manson stuff, like TV movies, history, bios. And I watched some of them. They're rather interesting. It's not really my huge thing, but I looked at some of them and I really liked it. It was very interesting, the whole story of that. He's not cool, but his stories are rather interesting if you like horror and horror stories. And so when I saw that, so it's kind of funny that this is the one I'm picking to her question. But yeah, this is Quentin Tarantino, and he's doing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He's going to reenact the Tate Bianca murders, I think. I don't know much about the movie, but that's my understanding of what it's about. And so, you know, I really like Quentin Tarantino. The whole show here, anybody we've ever had on likes him, so we like him. And I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that one. What do you think of that one, Darren?
I'll let the waters calm before I talk about that one.
Okay, all right. And you may talk me out of it. Who knows?
I don't think I'll talk anyone out of it, because I will probably see it. It's just one of them which has got a lot of controversy around it already. Mm. It isn't. The calendar isn't terrible. I was thinking you would have gone with Glass as your pick, to be honest.
Didn't? Yeah, I pretty much didn't like. I can't think of these names. There's so many of them now. Split. I didn't really like Split. I mean, I talked about that a little bit, so I'm surprised you, maybe you forgot that. But I wasn't huge into it. I was really liked the whole movie, but the ending kind of set up this next sequel, and I didn't. That part didn't work like a psychology study. It looked like a psychology study till the very end. And then it sort of became a setup for Glass. So M. Night is one of my... I'm solid with M. Night because of The Village and many other movies he's done. But, yeah, he's going to have to really pull this one off with me.
Well, I am going to pick probably the most obvious choice in the history of film discussion. I want to know what happens next in Avengers.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. If I'm going to judge anything on a trailer I've seen, though, I really want to see Godzilla. That trailer looks phenomenal. And I don't want to see anything else for that movie. I just want to go in and see it. I don't care. Don't make any more trailers. That's enough.
Well, it's kind of like when people say, what do you want to see in the coming year? Like we said earlier off air, you mean next month? You know, pretty much next month.
Yeah. Remember, we do have It Chapter 2, which could be interesting. I'm not really looking forward to it, though.
I don't know. I'm just going to... Yeah, it was great. It's just another... Let's make money, you know? But it'll probably be good, so...
I think they've overstacked the cast for my liking, but...
Oh, really?
But anyway, let's get on to the next one. We'll have a lot of discussions about it, I think, throughout the year.
Yeah, probably so.
So... The Vern, the other guy we've talked about a lot today, he has a couple of questions for us. And the first one is, what film will you never watch and why? So, Damien, what is your film?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you know, there was one before that. Yeah, I think this will surprise people because I'm a big Martin Scorsese fan. I'll just say that. But I don't think I will ever watch Raging Bull. And I really like all the critics that have written extensively about it, including Roger Ebert. But for me, I don't think I'll ever see it.
Okay, I've seen it once, but I'm not really the biggest boxing fan, even though I want to see Creed.
Yeah.
It was, you could tell it dated. I don't know who the real guy is. I didn't need to see it again.
Well, you're making me feel better, but honestly, like, even if my peers all said you should see that, I don't think I would. I don't care to see how falling on a mat won you an award. So anyway.
Well, mine's more of another very generic answer for me. I have a Serbian film on my list. And basically because I know what happens in it and I don't need to see that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody can make me. No one will ever make me. I don't care. It's not happening.
Yeah. I did watch it. All I will say is you're not missing a whole lot in terms of storytelling. It's not much of a story going on, so let's leave it at that. But yeah, I think some of the stuff that you're finding taboo is, you know, kind of fast and not really part of the movie. So, but yeah, it's
Sounds like you've watched a very edited version.
I don't know. I watched it, and I don't know. I guess when you know something is so taboo, you're like expecting it to be worse than it is, you know?
Yes.
So.
Well, Laverne did have another question for us, and it is, what film are you most embarrassed that you've never seen?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot like this. How about you go first this time?
Well, of all the gin joints in all the cities, I've never seen Casablanca, so I can't quote it correctly. And I feel like it's probably one of the most essential movies you should have ever watched.
Yeah.
So.
Well, for me, you know, it's funny too. Like I've been talking a lot in this episode about, you know, sort of seeking this pastime of being a movie reviewer and a podcaster, and I love it. It's so much fun. But like one thing people always say is that you should see the Buster Keaton movies. If you don't see the Buster Keaton movies from the 1920s, then you know, you're missing out. You won't be able to compare anything. So, you know, I just probably won't, especially this one called The General. Everybody says you got to see The General. And
Yeah, you've got
I
to see
guess
the general.
I'm not embarrassed of anything, really. You should know that with me by now. What'd you say, Jared?
That's pretty much the only one I've seen. It's fantastic.
Oh, jeez. Now he's got me embarrassed. Okay. Well, maybe I will as a result, Vern. Thank you.
It's something that it was. I only really watched it because of Benny and June,
Okay.
which
Yes.
you probably heard of that one, but. Johnny Depp
I've
basically
seen that
is
one.
a Buster Keaton impersonator in that movie, and most of the jokes and stunts he pulls off are from The General.
That's going way back, but I do remember that. Yeah.
So it's
I don't
that's why
remember
I've
that from The
watched.
General, but I remember he does that weird walk and stuff.
Just the walk, the bit with the bread stick, bread and forks, and he has the look and the hat tricks are all sort of things that Buster Keaton used to do.
Yeah.
But I've got a collection of theirs of Keaton and Chaplin's, and I've never really watched them. So.
Well, from what I hear, they're amazing. And if you watch them, you'll be a better reviewer. So you'll have to get on that.
Well, let's finish the questions and look at what we've been watching. So we'll save our little mini review of a certain theme of October movie to the end. And what movies have you watched that you enjoyed this month?
Oh, well, which one are we saving?
The one that we didn't like.
Okay. Then I won't talk about it yet. I will tell you this. I did this thing for my podcast that I have called the DRP, Damien Riley Podcast, and I just wanted to I listened to these other guys called Hack and Slash. I really like them. They're like my number one faves right now. And they always tell me to quit telling people they're good because they're very humble, but they're called Hack and Slash and they have a podcast. They're really, really good. And what they do is they just go through movies. They just walk through movies. They tell you at the beginning, hey, we're going to spoil everything. I love that. So refreshing. So I've kind of been sort of trying their style of doing that. And I went through Psycho. So I watched Psycho again and I did a walkthrough and just every aspect that was somewhat interesting to me, even the ones that weren't. And I just walked through it and I gotta tell you, Psycho is so incredibly done. And just to see the way that they tighten down the screw on this woman who's stolen money is it's filmmaking at its best. There's a lot to Psycho that doesn't have anything to do with Norman Bates. I mean, just the filmmaking of the whole thing when she's driving in the car and she's thinking thoughts, just that alone is so amazing. Like, I know they tried to remake Psycho, and I haven't seen the remake, but I don't think you should ever try and remake
You
that. It's
have
just so
seen the
well done.
remake. It's exactly
Oh.
the same. It's a shot for shot remake. It's not
Okay,
the
I see what you're saying. Yeah, but I mean, there's no need to remake Psycho. It stands up with everything, and I really enjoy Psycho. So if you haven't seen Psycho, I'll tell you what, you wouldn't be bored 1 second if you watched it again, or if you have seen it.
See, I have seen Psycho, and the thing that frustrates me the most about Psycho is not being able to see it for the first time without
Oh,
knowing everything. Like, we all, like,
yes.
because every sort of horror list has got the shower scene, the twist about Norman Bates, and sort of,
Yes,
and when
yes.
you know that, it takes so much out of that movie.
Yes.
Because imagine watching that and not knowing. It's the same feeling as when you watch Saw for the very first time. It's like,
Right.
yes, the quality of film is a completely different discussion here.
Yeah.
But the end bit of that, because you didn't know what was going to happen, it surprised you a lot.
Yeah, I
I know.
wish that we do a lot of polls online. Even when the internet first came out, like 96, 98, it was starting to get really popular, bulletin boards and things like that. They used to do like, well, okay, what are the statistics on this movie? What are the statistics on how many people want free lunch for their kids? Whatever, you know, all these different statistics were just starting to get posted online. And I wish back in 19, I believe it's 50, isn't it? I think it's 1950. It's getting back there, somewhere in the 50s. And I wish that they had that ability just to ask people, be honest, did you guess the ending? Because I will bet you, like you're saying, you're kind of jaded to it, but I'll bet you back then, I'll bet you nobody knew what was coming. I'll bet you it blew them away. And the way they like kept it from people was by always showing Norman Bates' mother as a silhouette, you know, or from behind, or just different ways, and it's ingenious. And he never allowed it to get out, you know, until it was supposed to. And I think people back then, they didn't even have like depression drugs, you know, like Prozac and all that. And you know, the mind, forget about it. Everything was the body, you know. So to talk about a split personality and all that at the end, where Claude Aiken is speaking about what the mother is and what Norman is. I mean, can you imagine? The people must have just flipped out.
Well, that's what I mean. It's something that needed to be experienced for the first time. And
Maybe,
it's one of them that, while it's still great to watch, it's the impact it had back then has been lost by the fact that everybody knows the ending now.
right. What have you been watching, sir?
Well, I've had a little Netflix explore, and I watched, strangely enough, two films connected to The Raid. First of all, the director of The Raid, Gareth Evans, did Apostle, which is a bit slow but turns a bit bonkers in the final act. And then I watched The Night Comes for Us, which stars the lead of The Raid, which is an absolute nutso action movie. Blood everywhere, things breaking that probably shouldn't break. And I don't know how great it was, but it was, as a story, was very simplistic because it was all about the action. But God, that guy can make some magical action with his team.
Yeah.
I could watch them again and again, but
Well, haven't seen that one. I'll have to look into that one.
if we jump into the cinema, I got through Venom, fine, not that great, not that bad. First Man, I did really enjoy, but I can understand why people were not enjoying it. It's about his life rather than the space program. So if you did want to see lots of spacey stuff, you have to get through a lot of life stuff as well. Simple as that.
Interesting.
Everything that's shot in space looks amazing though.
Oh, good.
And it looks realistic for the time as well. It's not interstellar type of space stuff. It's imagine what it would have been like through the lens that they would have seen in like the late 60s. And surprisingly, the bit of a surprise package of the cinema trips this month has been Hunter Killer. Now,
Yeah, I
I
saw that on your site.
it's basically just a bit of a submarine thriller about the Russian president is held hostage by his deputy minister, who, if the president's out of contact, he gets control of the country, and he wants to start a world war with America. And you've got a marine team, a sub team, and the office, war office, trying to navigate through the problem before it becomes World War III. And anything in a submarine is quite a tense movie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't see many, which is why I think this one sort of stuck with me a bit more, because it's not something you see every week. Like, you watch an action movie or a superhero movie, there's like 20 a year now. But a submarine movie is like once every 3 or 4 years. So they're always a little bit more tense. Mm. And it's just really gets really going, this movie. It's like 2 hours long, but you don't notice it's 2 hours long. It's like there are certain moments where it's really, really tense. And it, compared to when you go in not thinking too much, it does pose a big question of if there was ever the next war, it doesn't necessarily have to be a whole country. It just needs to be someone who's got an itchy trigger finger that could start it. So,
yeah, that's scary.
What else have you seen at the cinema?
Well, if you want to go cinema, okay, that's a different deal. Let's see here. I've seen so many kind of rewatches and different things. My cinema ones. Well, okay, well, I can say that I saw Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, and I'm sure for a lot of people out there, it's probably still playing, so I would say definitely go see it. It's a lot of fun. I went thinking that I would be bored, but I was not bored. My youngest daughter, who is 11, said she really wanted to see it, so I couldn't turn her down. We went and saw it, and probably one of the best things about it was we got to see the really long trailer for The Grinch before we saw it, and that really got me excited. This movie is actually partially by the same company. The Sony Animation people did all the animation of the creatures in Goosebumps 2. It's a fun story about three young people and a marionette puppet named Slappy. You've probably seen before if you know Goosebumps. And you get to see gummy bears get huge and killer gummy bears get huge and come to life and stuff like that. So I really did enjoy that. You can find a review on my site, RileyOnFilm.com. And you know what? I'll just say real quick, you know, Darren and I have been doing this, this podcast for like 2 years now, going on 2 years, I think. And you know, we both have sites and we put a lot more up there than we do here. So Darren's is Movie Reviews 101 and mine is Riley on Film. So and my podcast is the DRP podcast. But yeah, as I'm scrolling through my site right now, I'm just saying, oh, I want to talk about all these movies, but we'll be here all day. So I'm sure Darren feels the same way, right, Darren?
There are a few more that I would talk about.
There's a few more on your site, yeah. A lot more than mine. But anyway, so yeah, seen that one and the one that we're going to talk about as well.
Shall we dive into that discussion?
I think
now?
We might as well. Yeah.
Where do we start with Halloween?
Oh, help. Was it the fact I haven't written that one up yet, even.
Was it the fact that it was written by your favorite comedian, Danny McBride? Or
are you kidding me? He wrote it?
Co-wrote it.
I saw he was a producer, executive producer. Yeah. Here's the thing. These are movies that do real well, and they have, I think it made $80 million last weekend. So it's really not my place to criticize these films. They're obviously working. They're doing something right. The thing that bothers me is that young people go to these movies and they think that's what Halloween is. That's what scary, successful movies are. And I found this movie to be very similar to, and I've used this put down before, but it's never more relevant than right now, a Disney Channel, almost like a Goosebumps 2, which is okay because it is Goosebumps 2, but Halloween is on the edge, man. Halloween is the shape. Halloween is very simple music that freaks the shit out of you, you know? And this film is more like teenagers making really bad, stupid jokes that aren't funny. Playing around at the punch bowl. You know, it's just my memories of this film are not what I thought they would be. They're trying to make Jamie Lee Curtis into Sarah Connor, which I found utterly annoying and ridiculous. So those are just some of my kind of backbone problems I had with it. There's so much I could say that went wrong. I'm embarrassed to say that both my daughter and I brought my daughter with me. Both of us were actually on our phones about the last third of the film. We had no interest. We'd completely lost interest. And I'm just sad that it has made so much money and people think differently than me, but I mean, that's my honest feeling. So I'm hoping Darren will have something similar to say.
You were allowed to take your daughter to see an 18.
I can sign in. I can sign her in, yeah.
What is it?
There are a lot of kids in there, believe it or not.
What rating is it in America?
It's R. That just means requires a parent.
Okay. So in England, it's actually an 18.
They don't let them in even.
No, we have 15 ratings, which I think is no more than a 15 rating, to be honest. There's nothing that gory in this movie.
Yeah.
I think my biggest problem is the casual fan goes in automatically in their head thinking there is a relationship between Laurie and Michael.
Yeah.
Well, but obviously everyone sort of has it in their head that they were brother and sister. But it doesn't get revealed until the second movie, this. Mm-hmm. So that bit can get erased, but it's also stuck in everyone's head. And then she basically has turned into what... I know you're not the biggest fan of Scream, but in Scream 3, Neve Campbell's character is living in isolation in fear of the boogeyman coming back ever. And she's basically Neve Campbell hiding, but she's done it for her whole life. I just, the thing is, I found the bit with the babysitter so funny.
And the little kid, he was, you know, I mean, in a different setting, I thought he would have been great, but I just thought he took away from the movie.
That's what I mean. That's why I called it a bit of a tonal mess, because while the funny bits were really funny and felt like they could have easily been in a Scream movie, when it got serious, like anything about victimization, how like, Laurie's lived her whole life as a victim and couldn't cope anymore and has been living in this paranoid delusion for 40 years. It's like, that's actually quite an interesting way to take this story. If they had just stuck with just looking at that, I would have been really, really, really interested. It's the fact that they have that, while it's in a great shot, it's that one shot where Michael's going around into houses killing people. And... yeah, it looks fantastically well shot, but it's like, and so what? It proves nothing. We already know he's a psychopathic killer. He's killed two or three completely random people that have no influence on the story. We have a fat Philip Seymour Hoffman Jr. who's just annoying. You know which kid I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, he just reminded me of a young Philip Seymour Hoffman. And when he was being like his little dick roles in like Patch Adams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But not that, obviously he's a wonderful actor. We miss him greatly, but it just reminds me of a young version of him.
How he looks, yeah.
Yeah, and how he acted. It's just certain lines that he pulls out. But then, again, go back to that babysitter scene. The whole scene set up really well. Bit of comedy. I'll accept that. But the trailer gave away the big twist in it. It's like, why is Michael Myers...
Oh, about the closet?
Yeah. We have, like, this is where I didn't like the movie. It's like, we have that scene where Michael grabs the hammer, walks into the house and kills someone. Fine. Shows you a psychopath. Then he plays hide and seek with a babysitter. It's like, why are you doing this? Like... why are you playing hide the dead body under a sheet? And it's sort of like, why couldn't you just make this like a normal cohesive story that's like, as I said, it just felt like a really terrible, another sequel we just didn't need. It's just confused the timeline.
And I don't know when people are going to realize that they just need to be themselves. It's almost like they're trying to emulate what it would be like in 2018, the way they filmed it in the babysitter scene in 1972 or whenever it was. You know, I mean, who cares? If you're going to do a remake, show what a babysitter does. And it didn't seem real at all.
I was left very, very disappointed.
And the little kid was just flipping the F word out. Like every other, I mean, not that I care, because I mean, I'm already at a horror movie with my daughter. So yeah, people might zing me on that. But I mean, did they have to have him just F, 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 F? That was like really strange. Didn't fit.
So that's the way, and it just, and then you have the whole family dynamic. It's like, again, didn't really need it. If you're going to do this, in the weird way about this is it could have worked slightly better as a six-part TV show. So you could have delved into Laurie's life and how much of a struggle it is. We have like 20 minutes to 30 minutes of pointless rubbish with the damn reporters. Like the podcasters trying to get information. I don't know if they just are fans of Kevin Smith or thought, oh, we'll put a podcaster in a horror film.
Yeah.
But
well, they're super popular now.
It just didn't seem to make any sense, that part of the story. And why in the hell are you transferring Michael Myers on Halloween if you know he's a Halloween murderer?
Oh, so, what about this one? The guy who replaced Donald Pleasance, who I absolutely, I just respect that man. I like that man. He's such a great actor. You know, rest in peace. But that guy who was like, if you want to say just like replacing his role, kind of,
well, as
he
Laurie
was talentless. He had no voice. He had no talent. He was not charismatic in any way.
Well, I think Laurie has the best line where she turns around and says, oh, so you're the new Loomis. Yeah. And that's a line in the movie. That's not even like someone in the publishing department going, so this is the guy we just got to replace Donald Pleasance. It's,
yeah.
No, you're the new Loomis.
I know. And it's so clear. And they try, that's, you know what, ultimately, I think we caught them on that. They tried to get in there and, you know, make a final hurrah. When I say they, I mean John Carpenter and her and, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis. And they, you know, it's obviously working. $80 million last weekend.
But that's the buzz behind it. That's always going to be there. It's 40 years, there's a Halloween movie. It's like, that I can accept that it's going to make money, because whatever happens, people, before you saw it, you wanted to see it.
There is probably no, and I don't listen to many. I've got like 6 horror podcasts on my phone that I listen to when I, you know, go to sleep or in the evening when I'm doing dishes and stuff. And I have not heard one of them say, that was amazing, that one pod. You know, a lot of them are British, so I'm imitating the voice. But, you know, no, none of them are saying that. They're all saying, okay, we might as well just move on. It's just so bad.
The way some of the YouTubers I watch, like Chris Stuckman, pretty much ripped it to shreds.
Yeah.
And he's one of the main like, popular ones. Mm-hmm. But then, like, Jeremy Johns actually really enjoyed it as just a slasher movie. Mm-hmm. So it depends what you go in there looking for, I think. Because as a slasher movie that has a killer in a mask, it's passable. It has some gory kills. It has some good little fighty-ish sequences. Apart from the fact it decided to try and do a Saw-like ending.
Yeah, it's, just for fun. When you people out there, I'm sure a lot of you guys are on Internet Movie Database. Just go to this movie, open it up, and then go to user reviews. And then where you can refine your search, just choose all the people that gave it 1 star. It'll like on the phone, I know it gives you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Just go to the 1. And I think there's about 15 people. I added mine, so now there's 16. But you want to laugh your ass off? Read those. They're like, Okay, first of all, Michael is way too tall and stuff like that. Like, I should have brought him to the show.
That shouldn't be a problem because it is the same actor that played the first Michael Myers.
Oh, is it really? That's cool. Well,
for maybe some of the close-up shots. I think the close-up shots of the aging version of him without the mask is the same actor.
Yeah, and why did they show his face? That's the biggest no-no.
He wouldn't be wearing the mask in the house in the mental home, which
you don't show it. You show behind his head.
Yeah, I think everything we saw was right amount of face stuff. But then when they take the mask scene back, they've just ripped that out of one of the rubbish sequels of Halloween that nobody liked. To go on the IMDb scores, 329 people have given it 1 out of 10 on the rating.
Okay, good. Good.
I gave it a 5.
I'm glad it's more than 11.
I gave it 5.
You did not. Oh, that's 5 is so nice.
I saw it as a passable horror. For my age demographic, it gets a 7.5. But for yours, it gets a 7.3. Does that make you feel better?
Yes, because, I mean, okay, I think it was 70s. Star Wars came out in 77. This is probably 70, right? It came out in 70 or no?
I think it's 79, yeah.
Came out after Star Wars. Okay. So we were older people my age. I was 9 years old. So I didn't see it. My parents would never let me near that theater. Most people my age probably didn't see it in the theater. But we saw it growing up on TV, renting it, you know. So we were very familiar with Halloween 1. And to see this, I'm glad to hear that, you know.
Just on another side of the scale, non-US users give it a 7.3, but the US user give it a 7.6.
I know, because they want to go have fun. Yes. They want to go eat their marijuana wax that's legal now and go see Halloween, you know?
I do like how they make an effort to put an under 18 score, but in England you can't watch it when you're under 18.
That's right. Isn't that good? Yeah, but we all know they see it. In fact, they may be the target audience.
No, they weren't. Well, maybe.
You never know.
Okay, well, that's our little bashing of Halloween. So that's going to finish off our show for today. So if you want to ask us some questions, you can come and follow us on Twitter and send us your questions, and we'll try and answer them on next month's show. And what we want you to do is tell us what is good and bad from November and why, and what you're going to look forward to seeing in December. You can find Damien at fill in the blanks, please.
No, sorry. Yeah. He's confused because I've made some additions in recent years. RileyOnFilm.com, my written reviews. If you'd like to listen to my monologue podcast, it is at thedrpodcast.com.
Okay. And you can find me at moviesreview101.com for my written stuff. You can search Movie Reviews 101 on YouTube to see my video reviews. You should head over to Ready Steady Cut to see some of my some written reviews I've been putting up for that website too.
Very good.
So until December comes, we can do our Christmas special, which will probably have no Christmas films on it.
Yeah.
So thank you all for listening, and good night.